Think.
Blog Talk Radio.
Think. Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, business, financial, entertainment, and networking needs. We would like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. Have you spread the word today? Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. It's Big, your host for today. Our co-host is none other than Gloria. Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, everyone.
Great. For our new listeners, make sure you visit ThinkBigRadioHost.com. That's ThinkBigRadioHost.com to learn more about your big thinking host. Today we have a special guest that is going to share with us everything that you need to know to be successful in the boardroom and more. Cal, are you there?
Yeah, Big, I'm here, and I'm glad to be with you and Gloria.
Well, the first thing we want you to get out before we even get started with this interview is all of your contact information. How can people reach you?
The best way for people to reach me after the conclusion of this show is on www.theperfectboard.com, and all my contact information is there and also information about the book.
Great. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from and where you're at.
Well, right now I'm sitting in Baltimore, Maryland, where it's about 88 degrees, a little warm here, but it's July and it gets warm here like that every year. I went to the University of Maryland for my undergraduate degree, and I got my master's in business administration at Loyola College. And then I went into the world of business, and 31 years ago I started an association management company. And what we did basically is to manage nonprofit trade organizations and associations. And we've been doing that for 31 years. And it's been kind of my passion to help people govern their nonprofit organizations, because it's really a good thing to do, and I feel good about it.
So is this how your book came about, because so many people were coming to you for advice that you just couldn't share with them all at once, the perfect board?
Big, that's part of it. What I found through 31 years of working with boards is a lot of people just didn't understand what their roles were. They didn't know what they were supposed to do. Some
wow.
did, but most didn't know, because, hey, you get appointed or elected to a board, you're on it, and you know, they don't teach it in school. They don't teach it in high school or college. So where are you going to pick it up except from people or from actual service on a board? And I felt like a primer type of a book that people could easily relate to would be great, and that's why I wrote the book.
You know, that's something that I think that every organization needs, especially one that's growing, whether it's nonprofit or profit, is for everybody to know their direction. And so many times you find organizations that have an ultimate goal, but the let's call them the chess pieces, don't know which moves they're capable of committing to or making that'll enable that end goal. And I believe that's something that your book expresses.
Well, thank you, and that's the goal of the book, is to tell people what their responsibilities and what their duties are, so they can be, act in an intelligent way and in an informed way, and that they can help make decisions. And the goal really is to advance that organization to achieve its strategic goals or objectives, and that's what you want to do.
Now, for those of us who aren't really sure,
uh-huh.
what does the board of directors actually do?
A good example of what a board of directors does is, let's compare it to like a church board or your city council or a community association. These people are usually elected to represent the people in the community or in the church, because after all, you could not have everyone in the community or in the church or the school at the meetings and making policy and decisions. There's just be far too many people. Just like the Congress, we have 435 people who make the decisions in the House of Representatives. You couldn't have, 300 million people there. You couldn't even count the votes. So that's what a board of directors does. They represent the people of the constituency.
Right, okay. Gloria, did you have any questions as we're moving along with the interview?
Yes, I do. I have a question. Do you think everyone is equipped to be a nonprofit organization? You know, certain individuals, some people should stay away from it, or some people are, they should adapt to it.
I think everyone has an opportunity to represent their particular interest in any organization. So however you decide that constituency, whether it's geographically or regionally or from talent or skill or experience, yes, everybody has an opportunity to work for a nonprofit organization and on the board. But most times they got to be elected or appointed.
Okay, well, when we're talking about being elected or appointed, what do you think that certain boards look for individuals when they're, you know, inviting them to join?
A good thing to have is you want a mix of experience and talent and skills.
Okay.
So let me give you an example. If you have a board of directors, and I'll use the church organization. Say you have a church organization, and you know that you don't have anybody on your board that has accounting strengths or financial strengths. The board would be wise to go out and try to find someone to put on the board who is an accountant or has accounting skills, because that's a valuable experience for people to share on the board. Just like, Big, you have all these experience in marketing. It'd be great to have you on a board because you can bring that marketing experience and tell people how to do it, because a lot of people don't know how to do marketing at all. Same with accounting and other strengths as well, from the law, from psychology to psychology to many other strengths. That's what you're looking for.
Great. Okay, now let me bring up this point.
Sure.
Because some people may think that a board of directors also may be those that are in leadership. Is that something that may be true in some cases and not true? Like, let's say I'm on the board of directors,
uh-huh,
but I'm also in charge of accounting.
Okay, what I think you're trying to get at is that you might be on the finance committee. Some organizations call it the finance committee.
Okay.
Or the money committee, but usually it's the finance committee. Yes, a board can make different committees to do specific things. And the finance committee is a great example, because you should have a finance committee, which would be like a subcommittee working for the board. And they would develop all the monetary and fiscal policy for that board. And then they would bring those recommendations to the board of directors for the board's approval. Is that kind of getting what you were aiming at?
I think that actually answered me exactly what I was looking for. Not that I was looking for a particular answer, but that was a great answer. And when we think about some of these committees and we look at scandals such as, you know, what happened with Enron, do you see a downturn in board corruption and more emphasis on board ethics?
Well, I think 99% of the people are really good in this country, and most people, we know them, our neighbors, our friends, they serve with honesty and integrity. You always get a rotten apple in the barrel, and I'm not sure you can ever make enough laws to prevent that from happening.
Wow.
But a board has a responsibility of representing the people. And in Enron's case, they were in charge of representing all those stockholders, and they didn't do a very good job, and that's why a couple of them went to jail, because they didn't fulfill their obligations.
Now, would you say your book, The Perfect Board, is geared toward people on more so on corporate or business boards, or?
There's a basic difference between a corporate board and a nonprofit board. A corporate board, generally the people are compensated, so you get paid. You might get paid $50,000 a year to be on a corporate board and make decisions. On a nonprofit board, you're not going to get paid anything. You might get your expenses reimbursed, but you may not even get that. You may have to you know, pay for that out of your own pocket. Now, this differs from a political board or a city council or one of these groups, because those are elected people and they get paid and we know what their salaries are. They work very similar to a board.
Now, I know recently one of the legal entities that have come into play has been the limited liability corporation, where you
right.
take the best of a corporation, the best of a nonprofit, all the different things, and you put them together. Now, what about some nonprofit boards that they basically merge in all of the different entities, where you may also get paid on a nonprofit board, and you know, basically get a salary to make decisions? Have you seen any of this type of thing going around lately?
Generally, what we see is that the nonprofit organization, and I'm going to stick right now with the nonprofit,
okay.
because most of us are familiar with this. And let me tell you this, Big, here's a great big figure for you, too. The IRS says that last year there was 1.8 million nonprofit organizations in this country. That's a lot of organizations, right?
Wow.
Tremendous amount of them. Most of them, the people are not getting paid that serve on the board. The people that are getting paid is what we call staff. And the executive director, the executive vice president, or the chief staff officer, whatever that person is called. Those are the people that are getting paid. But the folks that are sitting on the board, they're not being compensated except for maybe some reimbursed expenses. And the bylaws might even say that they can't be compensated.
Wow. What would be some of the most common things that new members misunderstand about serving on a board?
I think there's a disconnect when some people get on the board. They think it looks good on their resume, or it'd be good to talk about to their neighbors and friends that, hey, I'm on a board. But the board requires time, energy, and actually probably some of your own money. And there is a commitment. And you need to make that commitment that you're going to serve and you're willing to give that kind of time. Many board members just don't understand this. This is why we have what we talk about in the book about a commitment form that we actually suggest that nonprofits should have all their directors sign this form saying, hey, I understand that this commitment means I'm going to be at 4 board meetings. There's going to be 6 conference calls. I got to travel to so-and-so. So it's all in writing, and they sign this, and then they know, and they can't come back to you later on and say, well, Big, I didn't know, right?
Right, you're right. Now, when it comes to board misconduct, what do you think some of the common sources are, and have you found a way that they could be avoided?
The biggest thing that I've seen in my career and that we've all read about is conflicts of interest, right? We've
wow.
all heard about these. And a conflict of interest is very simply where you benefit or someone stands to benefit from some action or some decision that board of directors makes. Maybe your brother-in-law's, you know, a paint contractor. Maybe your wife is connected to the marketing end of the business or something. It's a conflict of interest when you don't declare it. If you declare it and the board's aware of it, it's not so much of a conflict of interest. But you really should step back and not make decisions on those issues when you know something that's going to benefit someone else or even yourself. You should step back and recuse yourself, as the term goes.
Wow. And that will come back down to really your ethics as a board member. So
yes, sir. Exactly.
Are those some of the traits that the perfect board member should have? What would be some of the top traits?
My number one trait is honesty and integrity. I mean, it's one word, honesty, but it involves integrity.
Right.
You got to have that. You got to be honest, because if you're not honest, in the end, you're only going to cheat yourself. It's like the golfer who cheats. You may have a lower score, but you're only cheating yourself.
Yeah.
You got to be honest, and when you're honest, you know this, Big, and your experience too, is that when you're honest and people know you're honest, they respect you. And when you have that kind of respect, you're admired, by your peers and they ask you for advice. Another trait is I already mentioned commitment, that you're committed to it. Another one is you're cooperative.
Wow.
It's very important that you work together with other folks. Those would be my three biggest ones.
You know, it's funny you say honesty and integrity, because that's an acronym we like to use when someone approaches you and, you know, they say hi. You know, it's like when you meet that person, that hi is like honesty, like are you an honest person, and what's your integrity level?
You told me that the I in big stands for integrity.
that's a good one. That's one of them. There's so many acronyms for big, sometimes I can't remember all of them.
Yeah.
Before we carry on a little bit more, and I'm going to let Gloria ask some questions, let's get out your contact information again. How can people reach you?
The best way people have internet access is www.theperfectboard.com. Simple as that. All my information is there. There's information about the book, The Perfect Board, and there's even a couple of things, like the free commitment form is on the board as well. Plus,
great,
we have some other tips.
Okay. Gloria?
Yes.
I know you're listening intently, and you're just waiting for me to get you back on in here, but feel free to cut me off when you need to.
Okay, I have a question. Cal, now, before you even get on someone's board, shouldn't you make sure that nonprofit is legitimate and make sure they're of a good character and reputation?
Great question, Gloria, and I agree with you 100%. Yes, you should. You should check them out before you serve on any board. You should definitely investigate it, explore it. And you can do that in a couple of ways. You can go to GuideStar.com.
Mm-hmm. I know
or
about
chat,
that.
You know, or what about CharityNavigator.com? Have you heard of that one as well?
Yeah, I know about them too, yes.
Yeah, so you can go to either one of those. Now, the only problem with those, Gloria, is that those generally only take care of the larger associations and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So the smaller ones, you may not be able to get the information, but let me give your listeners a hint. Every organization files what's called a 990 with the IRS, and we all know who the IRS is.
Yes.
They are required, every organization, especially now in 2008 and forward, is required to have their 990 form available for public inspection. And that 990 form has information about who the directors are, the mission of that organization, and lots of other information, including the financial information. So you can determine how much money is going to the staff and how much money is actually going to programs and services. You can go into that office and ask them for that 990. They have to give it to you. They don't have to give you the actual one. They have to make a copy of it and give it to you. That's the IRS rule. If they do not provide it for you, I think the fine is like $10,000 a day for every day they do not give you that form. So that's a great way to investigate a nonprofit.
Because,
wow,
you know, sometimes a lot of people, they just like to say that they're nonprofit, and, you know, because that's, I hate to say this, but it's like an easy way to get money for some people.
Yes.
You know, they'll say, okay, I have a cause, but they figure their pockets can get heavy, but they don't understand there's guidelines and regulations that you have to follow, because if you're not legitimate, you can go to jail for a very long time.
Exactly. And the other thing, Gloria, is that every nonprofit has some state where they're headquartered in. So if you're, for example, in the state of Maryland here where I am, you can just go to Annapolis or go into the Maryland.gov page, and you can research those organizations that have their corporate status here in this state, and in every other state it's the same way. And you can go in and look it up and find out, get a copy of their articles of incorporation and a copy of their bylaws to find out if they're legitimate. And here in the state of Maryland, it'll tell you whether it's an active corporation or not. They have to file a state form each year, and they have to file the 990, the IRS form, each year. So
mm-hmm.
That's a way to check on them, yes.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. You're listening to Calvin Clemens from Perry Hill, Maryland, author of The Perfect Board. Now, I understand that that you've also been featured in publications such as the Dallas Morning News, the Virginia Pilot, the Indianapolis Star, the New Jersey Star-Ledger. How did that come about from your book?
When you write a book, people ask you to write other articles, and they call and interview you just like you're doing big, because people want to learn. This is an exciting field, as I mentioned, with 1.8 million nonprofits. With an average size of 19 board members, that's about 40 to 50 million people that serve on boards in this country. So there's a lot of folks that serve on boards. They want to know what to do. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't teach it in school.
You're right about that. Now, one thing that brings to mind with all these people serving on the board, what about someone that's, you know, an experienced board member? What can they get from your book?
It's like a refresher. It can bring back the things that they're supposed to do. It can teach them a few new things. We talk about the Sarbanes-Oxley bill. We talk about indemnification and insurance and other things. They may not be aware of all those things. They may have been sitting on a board for 3 or 4 years, and they just haven't come across those things. Just because someone's been on a board doesn't mean that they know what to do.
But would you also say the better the board, the better the business?
No question about it. Just like a baseball team, the better the players, the better chance they have of winning the World Series. So you have to have a better board. You're going to be able to accomplish the mission of that organization. And that's the reason why the boards are there anyhow. They are there to carry out the strategic plan of that organization and achieve the mission, whatever that mission may be.
Now, I'm glad that we have Gloria on here co-hosting tonight, and it brings me to another question. It's pretty funny how most of our hosts on Think Big Radio, they are women. But when it comes to boards, what do you think about women and minorities? Are they being underrepresented on boards?
I think that they are gaining more and more exposure on boards. I see more women in the nonprofit field. In fact, in the nonprofit organizations, there was a study done by the Annie B. Casey Foundation that said that the average age and representation of an executive director of a nonprofit is a woman 57 years old. So the women have already made some inroads, but it's a great opportunity for minorities as well. There's just so many openings, and if the people would just come forward and volunteer, there's just tremendous opportunities for them.
Now, that's a big word that I'd like to comment on. What you just said there was volunteer. Do
right.
you think that if more people volunteered for organizations, they would be able to, you know, after the people on staff really see how they're working and how they do things, be invited to boards as far as just someone submitting a resume if they have board openings?
I'm going to use the baseball metaphor again.
Okay.
You know, We know the New York Yankees. They've always got a good team. And we also know the reason they have a good team is they have a farm system.
Right.
If a board and an organization starts a farm system and you use the committee structure, so you bring in the people and let them serve on a committee. If they prove their mettle, you make them a committee chair. If they're good there, then you put them on the board. If they're good there, then they become a leader and an officer of the organization. So it's almost like the farm system of a baseball team. Yeah, I think you might be able to see that.
Wow, yeah, you're right.
And you kind of weed out the people if they don't do work. Because, hey, Big, you and I have been around a long time, and we know that everybody that volunteers doesn't always do the work.
Right, and some people, I don't even know what volunteers are today from some of the things that I see. I thought a volunteer was somebody who wanted to work.
Well, you know, I got an interesting theory about that, if you want to listen to it just a minute.
We have time.
In the state of Maryland, we have what's called mandatory volunteerism. And what it means is that the kids in the state of Maryland have to have 75 hours of community service.
Wow.
When I went to school, you did volunteer. I mean, it wasn't required of you, but now it's required, and I think a lot of other states in the union do the same thing. In order to graduate high school, you've got to have 75 hours or whatever the requirement is. And now the kids, it's forced on them. So what does that do long-term to volunteerism? It's an interesting concept, isn't it?
And it's one that we should adapt across the United States. Some countries, after high school, you automatically, go into their military for a year or 2 years just so that you will be, so that you will have that type of love for your country. And if
yeah.
we can start small on things like this, I believe that it will make, a better citizen.
Well, volunteerism, it's a spirit. It's a feeling from within that you want to help. But if you require it, then it's not volunteerism, is it?
No, it's not.
I'm not sure why we do that.
Now, I want to just quote one of the excerpts from your book. It's called Beginning. We all aspire to perfection. It is a natural drive within us to make sure things work well and are as good as they can be. The perfect board is a set of precepts and ideas that can enable people, even the uninitiated, to work together effectively, efficiently, and harmoniously to achieve the goals of the organization. Tell me a little bit about that being the beginning of your book, and were you in deep thought when you first sat down and you took your pen and said, let me put down how I help people so that I can help more people by them being able to purchase this inexpensive book?
I feel really strongly about that, Big, because that's really, we used the word passion earlier in the show, that is my passion, to help people. Anybody who wants to serve on a board of directors, anybody who wants to become involved, anybody who wants to volunteer, just read through this book. And it only takes about an hour to read, maybe an hour and a half if you're a slow reader, but an hour and a half out of your life to learn about being on a board, you will have more knowledge than most other people on that board, because they won't know the same things that you know. You'll know what makes a proper vote. You'll know how many people have to be there in order to have a vote. You'll know about insurance. You'll know about indemnification. You'll know about the roles of loyalty and the duty of care. You'll learn all these things. So you'll know the language of the board, and they'll be so far advanced in an hour and a half. That's all it takes to read the book, in an hour and a half. And then carry the book with you to a board meeting. You'll know more than the people sitting around the table.
Well, I'd like to share with our listeners that I've always been an avid reader, and I've started reading your book. I haven't quite finished it, but it's a well read from the minute I picked it up, and I know I'll have it finished within a day and a half from now. It's a great book, and I have learned a lot from it, and that's one thing that our big thinkers do is, most big thinkers, they continue to read. They continue to educate themselves so that we can be a bigger service to those who are, requesting the types of services that we can offer them. Now, one of the things that I'd also like to for our listeners to know about you is that, you were also in the Army. How did that tie in to your own business that you have now, other than, the perfect board? Do you think that training was instrumental in getting you to where you are today?
Absolutely. When I was young, getting out of college, I didn't have much of a choice. I had to get into service. I went into officer candidate school and went to infantry OCS at Fort Benning, Georgia. We call it Fort Benning School for Boys. That was a kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. But the military taught us about leadership. It taught us about how to make decisions. And you have to make decisions. Sometimes, you have to make decisions based on the information at hand. You don't always have the luxury of looking back and saying, gee, I wish I could have, should have. you don't have that opportunity a lot of times. In business, the same thing. You have to make decisions based on the facts at hand, and that's what a board does as well. They have to gather those facts and then make good decisions and develop policy. So it really has helped me, my military experience.
Do you think it's a bad idea if someone has a nonprofit organization and all their members, their board members, are family members? Shouldn't that be a warning sign to someone?
It could be because, you know, one of the words we use in the book is diverse, and we
mm-hmm.
use diverse in a different kind of a way. We feel that an organization should represent all of its constituencies. So you'd have to look at the total organization, and as long as those other constituencies are represented, then that's fine, and that should be the board's goal. Gloria, if they're not, if they're only catering to a small portion of the organization, then you're right. That's a warning sign that you shouldn't be. And then people who care about it, are fervent about the organization, they can go in and maybe reelect or nominate and elect new people to serve those positions if they're able to.
And if they're not, they need to run, right?
Well, need to run and then start a competing organization,
mm-hmm.
one that really serves the goal that it was supposed to be. There are some, you know, we have to understand there are not every business in this country is not perfect, and not every organization in this business is in our world or our country is perfect, and we have to just understand that most of them are, but let's get rid of the ones that aren't and chop them out like weeds. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and looking at the sheer numbers of nonprofit organizations alone and how they're sprouting up, what would you say there's a really maybe a chance of a good 25% of them are, you know, really worth the time of day?
Oh, I would have to say as long as they're fulfilling their mission, they must be, because you couldn't succeed. You couldn't raise your funds to continue the organization onward and upward. So they must be succeeding. Maybe we'll find out in another 5 years with this economy now. There might be some washout, but I can't imagine a lot of them leaving. It's just been a fantastic growth in these last, and that growth has happened in 20 years because 20 years ago we only had about 480,000 nonprofits. So we've increased that by 1.4 million in 20 years.
Wow. Those are some numbers.
It's amazing numbers, isn't it? And by the way, if anybody wants to verify those numbers, there's an organization, a magazine is called the Nonprofit Times. And you can go to the nonprofittimes.com, I believe is their web address. And if you're a member of a nonprofit organization, you can get that magazine for a complimentary subscription. And they have loads and loads of data in there. In that magazine.
Would you say that you're more of an expert in the nonprofit field, or is it that more of your concentration is in the nonprofit field, but you're still an expert in both fields because they're so similar?
Yes, they're similar. I would say I'm very good at corporate, but I'm an expert at nonprofit. Yes, you've hit that nail on the head. There's some nuances on both of them. With corporate boards, there's a lot of different, depending upon the state that they're incorporated in, you have to look at their bylaws and their articles of incorporation to see how they're judged. Every corporation can be different and according to the laws. And as you know, corporate law, there's a lot of intricacies in corporate law.
You know, well, speaking of law, which law and politics pretty much almost sound the exact same to me. How would you settle conflict, you know, when board members disagree? What do you think is the best way?
Depends on the conflict, but the best way is always with facts. You know this from any of your experiences, probably Gloria and Big, in dealing with other issues that come in front of you in your life. when you have facts, it's hard to dispute facts, and you have to make sure the facts are correct. And really, you want to have a board that's cooperative from the start. So if you have a general feeling of cooperation and where people respect one another, you're not going to have as many disputes. And especially if you deal with the openness and conflicts of interest, if these things are aired in advance, there's less likely to have any opportunities for anything under the table. And usually, in my experience, that's when you've had problems, is when somebody's ox is being gored.
Wow.
So if you can reduce that or limit that or keep it to a minimum, then you're going to have less conflict on the board. I'm not going to say you're not going to have any, because it's good to be able to air differences. We all know that. In fact, we want the boardroom to have that environment where people can speak their minds without fear of incrimination or discrimination or anything else. At a boardroom, I want to be able to speak my opinions without anybody coming back on me and say, "What did you say that for?" We all want to have that opportunity to share ideas. And you and I talked about this earlier. The sharing of ideas and the good ideas is what makes organizations move forward.
That's true.
Now, for people in the community that may be serving on a school board for the first time, because every now and then you might be identified as a leader or someone who takes part in a lot of school activities because your child may go there, so they may say, "Hey, we'd like for you to join our board." What would be your advice for dealing with, you know, maybe the public scrutiny as far as being a school board member in that type of situation?
If it's a school board that's, most organizations are open to public scrutiny anyhow, and that's right. Happening more and more with the new IRS rules. But I would say if you're working with a school board or a church board where there's a lot of people looking over your shoulder, then you want to have this what they call transparency. You want your operations of the organization to be in the open so people can see them. So there's none of this under the table stuff that, well, we can't show you the financials, or we can't show you this, or we can't talk about that. People want to know. If they're investing time and energy and money, they want to know what's going on. So as that new board member, you want to make sure that the people that you represent, that you're talking to them and letting them know what's going on. And the other thing we go back to is integrity. I can't stress enough, if you're honest, your job's going to be a lot more, or a lot easier.
You know, that's I like how you said about, you know, dealing with the financials and letting them be open, because you may have some nonprofit boards that may be church boards that have popped up, and they try to, you know, maybe hide the financials from its members. And, you know, I'll always say that, you know, the more that people know about, you know, what's going on, the better they'll be as far as supporting you. And that's a big problem that you find on certain boards, is trying to hide things.
And that's why that new term that you've heard in the last couple of years, transparency, and you can use that as much as you want to, but it's like saying we have a window to the operations. And that's what the transparency means, that you can't be behind this closed door any longer and hope just to get out of it.
Now, I know where this interview is winding down, and sometimes it seems like 45 minutes is not nearly enough time.
I'd be always happy to come back, Big.
One of the things I like, if Gloria, if you have anything for him.
No,
before...
I don't have any more questions.
Okay,
Gloria,
well,
thank you very much.
The first thing I'd like for you to do is just basically get out your information one more time. How can we reach you?
Go to www.theperfectboard.com. We've got a lot of information there, and you can. My email address is there. If you want to send me an email, I'll be happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
You're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. What are the most important terms people should know when they're elected to a board?
As I mentioned earlier in the book, we cover a lot of those terms. But I guess the best term would be the mission of the organization, the vision of the organization, the duty of loyalty, the duty of care, and the duty of obedience. Those are probably the most important terms for a board member to know, in my view. There's a lot of other terms, and you can pick up the board speak by looking at the book and thumbing through the pages.
Okay, now, can we just find the board the perfect board on theperfectboard.com? Is it available anywhere else?
Yes, you can buy it through our website. But to be honest with you, if you go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, they offer such great discounts. I can't compete with them.
Wow.
Yeah, Amazon.com has a pretty good assortment. And this is the second edition. The first edition is no longer available.
Okay. So is there any groups, corporations, entities that you would that you would like to thank?
Any entities I would like to thank? I think I make mention of most of them in the acknowledgement section of the book, and to mention one or two on the radio may not be fair, but I really want to thank all those non-for-profit board members who are serving now and giving of their time and energies, and I hope they can learn a little bit from my book about how to do their job even better than they're doing it today.
Well, I know I've learned a lot of different things, and it's always a pleasure for us on Think Big Radio to have authors on who, you know, write these specific types of things, because the only thing that they, you know, do for us is, you know, help us on our road to education and educating our listeners.
And that's a great thing to do, Big.
And Cal, I definitely want to thank you and the people that were behind you that also helped make this possible, and we would love to have you on in the near future, you know, to tell us about some new things that you're doing, and we have a question and answer session in the near future where we'll have a few authors from the same categories come on, if you'd like to join that forum.
I'm always willing to work with you, Big. You do a good job, and you get the word out, and that's important in our community and our society.
We appreciate it. You just heard Cal Clement, author of The Perfect Board. Visit www.theperfectboard.com. That's www.theperfectboard.com. Host Gloria, do you have any last words?
No, I just want to thank Cal for being on the show tonight.
Well, thank you, Gloria. It's been nice being with you.
And you too.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, business, financial, entertainment, and networking needs. Think big, everyone.